Let's return now to the events in Ukraine. The truce announced yesterday morning, our time, unravelled overnight in some of the bloodiest fighting seen so far in Kiev. More than 20 have been killed in the past 24 hours, and as Phil Williams told us earlier, there are reports of a group of police officers being taken hostage by the protesters. The death toll for this week has risen to close to 70. An EU delegation of foreign ministers is in Ukraine trying to convince President Yanukovych to find a political solution. But they admit there's little the outside world can do to stop this violence. John Besmez is a Russia expert at the Centre for European Studies at the ANU in Canberra. John, good morning. Welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you.
John, yesterday a truce was announced between President Yanukovych and opposition leaders. Within hours, though, the fighting was on again in Independence Square, more deadly than ever. Why?
I think the tensions have been building, and the degree of radicalism in the opposition camp has also been building. And what are the reasons for that? Well, I think we have to go back to Yanukovych's decision to, after many, many years and millions and millions and millions of hours of negotiations, to abandon his efforts to get an association agreement with the European Union. That was a huge geopolitical decision. To take a counterfactual example, if an Australian Prime Minister were to suddenly go to Peking and return from there and announce to journalists without any publicity and any details of his negotiations there being made public and say Australia is abandoning the US alliance and joining China, both economically and more generally, I think Australians would expect that they might at least have an early election on that subject.
So what are you likening it to, though? Because you could say that the equivalent to our alliance with the US is Ukraine's alliance with Russia.
But Ukraine is not allied with Russia in that sense now. It was part of the Soviet Union, but it is trying and has been trying since it's become independent to maintain an equidistance between Russia and the West. And this was what was disturbed by that sudden decision. Because what Yanukovych, like predecessor, had been trying to do was to go with Europe, particularly on economic matters, whilst maintaining a good relations with Russia on other matters.
I was listening earlier to a former advisor to the Kremlin saying that this argument from the opposition and the protesters and the West that linking up closer linkages with EU was going to be of an immense economic benefit to the people of Ukraine was a furphy. He said that in that agreement there weren't things like, you know, free visa to travel and to work. It wasn't going to be the economic benefit that was being promised. What's your view?
Yes, no, I think that's all perfectly true. There would be economic benefits, but they wouldn't come immediately. And Russia, by contrast, was offering 15 billion smackers, which was a wonderful gift for Yanukovych. But he has to earn that gift. And what we've seen since that original agreement, and also at a sharp decrease in the price of gas, which is very important for Ukraine's economy, but it's been made clear, I think, to Yanukovych that he has to keep earning that. For example, the price of gas, that very, very vital supply, has to be reviewed on a quarterly basis. So, in other words, he has to keep delivering on the deal. And we don't know what the deal was, but many people speculate that the deal was that he would ultimately join not only the customs union, but the Eurasian Union. And that's something that Yanukovych himself has been determined up until now not to do.
And as you say, this was announced by Yanukovych after most in the country thought they were heading the other way towards closer ties with Europe. Europe has responded by sending a delegation of foreign ministers, but also threatening targeted sanctions on the officials that are behind this violence. They'll freeze assets and restrict travel. Is that going to make much difference?
I'm a bit sceptical about that. I think Europe and the United States have got into this too late and with too little for the reasons that you were just mentioning. Ukraine is in a desperate economic situation, and if it was going to be difficult for it to make that transition to European market conditions, then it was going to need some support. And not a great deal was on offer. The Europeans were saying that they could help them get an IMF loan, a roughly equivalent amount to what the Russians were offering, but the Russians were offering something much more up front. And I think, therefore, Yanukovych, from his own point of view, was not being entirely irrational in making that choice. But it was, of course, politically explosive, as he probably suspected it would be within the country, although he didn't realise just how explosive it was going to become.
It's 5 to 7 on Breakfast. Our guest this morning is John Besmeers, a Russia expert at ANU, talking about the conflict and what's behind the violence on the streets and what's bringing the people out in such numbers to Independence Square in Kiev. On that point, John, we heard from our correspondent Phil Williams in Kiev earlier, who was saying that after the truce broke down and the violence intensified, when there was a lull in that, the people came out in their many hundreds. And he said not just young fighting age men and women, there was older women and older men, there was women with children. It's like the people were flooding to make the point, make a political point in this show of strength. So they weren't being cowed by the violence and the bloodshed at the hands of the police. Does that suggest that this has become something more for the people than just a struggle about EU versus Russia? Are they trying to make another point here, another political point to their president?
Well, I think perhaps in more general terms, they would say, and they do say, that they want to live in a normal country. They don't want the kleptocracy. They don't want the terrible corruption of the present regime. They would like to have a normal life, rather like the one that they think they see in Europe. And although Europe's been going through some tough economic times, Europe still looks very good to Ukrainians, particularly those who can travel there.
John, can I just interrupt you for a moment? Did they have to use the words, their normal life for a while there after the Orange Revolution? Did they have a sense of change?
They did initially, but they were disappointed because the new government didn't deliver, really, and it was hit also by the GFC in the end, so it fell down badly economically at that point as well. So that was a great disappointment. Nonetheless, I think we're seeing to a considerable extent a repeat of those Orange events now. And as you were saying just before, from the outset, this has been a big people's manifestation. Hundreds of thousands. At one stage, they estimated up to 800,000 in the centre of Kiev. And yes, all demographic groups. And they maintained exemplary discipline and self-restraint until quite recently. Yanukovych wasn't gratuitously violent towards them, but he did make, over the 3 or 4 months, he's made 3 or 4 major attempts by force to disperse the group. And that's why the situation has gradually escalated.
Just finally then, what is the outcome here? Because the European leaders have acknowledged there's not much the outside world can do about the events in Ukraine. Ukraine has to deal with itself. There are calls from the opposition and from the protesters for President Yanukovych to step down and call a new election. He's resisting that. What do you think will happen?
Well, I think what should happen is that there should be new elections for the reasons I set out before. Whether that will happen, I don't know, because I think it's very likely that Mr. Putin is telling Yanukovych, we will continue to support you, but you will not have new elections. That will be a deal breaker, and we will not continue with the tranches of that $15 billion. You recall that just recently there was a meeting between them, not publicised much, in Sochi, in which, we can only speculate, but it seems highly likely that Putin said, I'll give you another $2 billion of that $15 billion, which you desperately need, but you've got to deliver, you've got to sort out the Maidan.
We were told yesterday by the correspondent on the ground there that some money had arrived that very day from Russia. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
John Besmeers is a Russia expert at the Centre for European Studies at the ANU in Canberra.